Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Wednesday, April 17th. Today, Colorado Sun political reporters Brian Eason and Jesse Paul discuss the so-called assault weapons bill embroiling the Capitol and the big roadblocks the bill has ahead. Before we begin, get ready. By 2034, older adults will outnumber children globally. Colorado-based Next 50 creates economic opportunities for older adults through grants and social investments. Next 50 works to combat age bias, ensure digital equity, and empower older adults to age on their terms. Explore our initiatives and grant opportunities at next50foundation.org. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Henry Teller was a native New Yorker and moved to Colorado Territory in 1861. He quickly became a prominent figure in law, mining, and politics. Elected as one of Colorado's first senators in 1876, he served until he resigned on this day in 1882 to become the Secretary of the Interior under President Chester A. Arthur. Teller was a fierce advocate for the Americanization of Native Americans and supported homesteading and mining as secretary. Returning to the Senate, he championed bimetallism and broke with the Republican Party in 1896 over its gold standard stance, aligning instead with the pro-silver Democrats. Teller retired in 1909 and passed away in 1914. Before we continue, we're excited to introduce Pine Melon, Denver and Boulder's community grocery app. Get fresh, locally sourced foods delivered to your door at fair prices. Enjoy the convenience of farm-to-table groceries at home. Their free same-day delivery saves you time while supporting local producers. Use promo code ColoradoSun for $50 off your first order. Next, our feature story.
Good morning, Daily Sunup listeners. It's Wednesday, so welcome to another politics-focused episode of the podcast. I'm Brian Eason, and I'm back here with my colleague, Jesse Paul. Hey, Jesse.
Hey.
So we're nearing the end of the 2024 legislative session. Lawmakers have been tackling a lot of hot-button issues, but there's one that really rises above the rest in terms of how controversial it is, how emotional it is on both sides. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, you nailed it, Brian. It's House Bill 1292, which would ban the purchase, sale, and transfer of a broad swath of semi-automatic firearms and defined in the measure as assault weapons. So this is the assault weapons bill folks have been probably hearing about if they're following along with Colorado politics. And it's been making its way through the House. It passed it at a committee pretty steadily, and then it was on the floor on Friday, and then on Sunday, final vote, 35-27, mostly along party lines, with three representatives excused. Republicans in the chamber were uniformly against the bill, and they were joined by nine Democrats, mostly from swing districts, folks like Megan Lukens of Steamboat Springs, Mark Snyder of Manitou, Bob Marshall of Highlands Ranch, then Mary Young of Greeley. So it's through the House after a lot of debate, and it's moving forward.
Okay, so now that it's passed the House, where do things stand with this bill?
Yeah, so like all legislation, it now has to go through the second chamber of the legislature. It has to go to the Senate, and that's where the real test for this bill is going to be, and that's because the Senate is really the more moderate of the two chambers in the legislature. I think it's like 50 to 75% as progressive as the House, if you want to kind of do back and napkin math in terms of thinking about how things play out here. So first step is going to be for Senate leadership to decide where to send this bill, which committee. So two options are the Senate Judiciary Committee and then the Senate State Affairs Committee, also sometimes known as the Kill Committee, because a lot of the legislation goes there to fail. But it would really make sense to send it to the other committees like Housing and Local Government or Transportation and Energy. These are the two ones that would maybe fall under. And the problem for this legislation is that in both of those committees, there's a swing Democrat on each, one Democratic majority vote, who would probably vote against this in the Judiciary Committee. That'd be Dylan Roberts. And then in the State Affairs Committee, that would be Representative Tom Sullivan of Centennial. So there's going to be some interesting decision-making from Senate leadership, Democratic leadership, on where to send this. We actually asked those folks about it. Here's what they had to say.
Sometimes there are changes on committees, but I think generally we don't do that in order to get a different outcome. You know, we let the process play out. I mean, that's how every bill has to go through the same process. And we generally aren't going to be doing musical chairs in order to get a certain outcome. I think the other calculation is that, in my mind, is only an option if you're certain the bill has the votes on the floor. We're not going to do it in order just to have a debate on the floor for them to die there.
And then once it makes it out of committee, assuming it does, again, that's a big if, it's unclear if the bill has enough support on the Senate floor to advance. Senate President Steve Benberg has kind of been telling reporters for weeks that it seems unlikely that it would have the opportunity to advance.
Okay, so where does the governor stand on this? It sounds like it might not make it out of the Senate, but has Governor Polis said what he would do if it reached his desk?
Yeah, so the governor, I asked him about this in an interview. He said that he's generally opposed to legislation that would ban specific kinds of weapons, and that's exactly how this bill would work. It defines certain guns or characteristics, you know, thinking about pistol grips or certain foldable stocks, as being assault weapons, and then it also has like a list of specific weapons that would be assault weapons under the bill. So the governor said he's skeptical of it, wouldn't say whether or not directly he would veto it or not if it makes it to his desk, but certainly I think his skepticism, you can read between the lines.
Gotcha. Has anything like this been tried before in Colorado?
Yeah, so last year at the legislature, a similar bill was introduced by one of the same sponsors, Representative Elizabeth Epps. It didn't make it out of the House Judiciary Committee. The committee had kind of a different makeup last year, but it saw similar kind of controversy and support and folks showing up at the Capitol. But things have changed a little bit, as I mentioned, right? It made it out of its first committee this year. Now it's passed the House. This is as far as we think it's a similar piece of legislation has ever made it before. But this is kind of new territory. Democrats, up until recent sessions, have been pretty reticent to pass gun control legislation in Colorado. So this is kind of like the big ticket item that's been on the horizon for a long time. So if they were able to pass this, it would be kind of a watershed moment in Colorado politics.
Interesting. I know I'm using this word a lot, if it's signed into law, are you expecting there to be a court challenge? And what might that look like?
Yeah, so Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, which is a really hardline gun rights group in Colorado, has already said that if this somehow is passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, that they will sue and try and invalidate it in court. And we know that they actually might have a pretty good chance, and that's because of this thing called the Bruin decision. I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, but basically it's a Supreme Court precedent that says that gun legislation, in order to be constitutional under the Second Amendment, has to have some kind of historical precedence. And you've seen challenges to these kind of laws in other states with mixed success. A lot of this stuff is still being litigated in courts across the country. But I think that there is a concern that if this passes, if it's signed into law, that it will go to a judge and the outcome may not be favorable to proponents. So a lot of big question marks here in the weeks ahead.
We'll definitely be watching and keep you posted on what happens. Thanks so much, Jesse.
Thanks, Brian.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado lawmakers are weighing stricter regulations for railroads as the stalled Uinta Basin Railway proposal seeks fresh tracks to move crude oil from Utah through Colorado to the Gulf Coast. The Colorado House approved legislation that would limit train lengths as backers of the controversial Uinta Railway scramble to draft a new plan. The bill would require railroads to better train workers and community firefighters to handle hazardous spills. The legislation says companies must install detectors on every 15 miles of track to monitor trains and also maintain insurance to cover the cost of spills. The bill has been forwarded to the Senate. Two women at the Golden History Museum have uncovered a disturbing trend in a 100-year-old ledger showing women being sent to the Colorado Mental Hospital because of lunacy. Looking through a Jefferson County jail ledger, they noticed an unusual number of women locked up by their husbands for being insane. Of the 280 charges against women listed in the book, 74 are for lunacy or insanity. Of those women, at least 31 were sent from jail via train to what was then called the Insane Asylum at Pueblo. The average age of the women charged was 40, which is about the time perimenopausal symptoms might begin. As the campaign season heats up, candidates' latest financial reports show Lauren Boebert has a big fundraising lead over her Republican primary opponents. She is running in Colorado's 4th congressional district after two terms in the 3rd district. Boebert's fundraising has dropped off since switching districts, but the nearly $1 million in her campaign's bank account at the end of March was far more than her rivals. In the sprawling 3rd congressional district, Boebert's former challenger, Democrat Adam Frisch, raised $1.4 million from January through the end of March, the most of any Colorado congressional candidate in the quarter. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Tamara Chung, and I write about business and technology for the Colorado Sun. A large part of my beat is the Colorado economy and covering the ups and downs of losing a job, finding a job, running a business, all that fun stuff. You'll find coverage every Saturday in What's Working, and it's free because we feel all Coloradans need to know this stuff in order to stay better informed. You know, that's how we roll here, by the way. And that's why we'd appreciate your support to help keep the Colorado Sun sustainable. If you'd like to become a member, you can just go to coloradosun.com/join today. Thanks.